Welcome to Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan. I'm Kate Burdett. Coming up, it may be a while before school is back in session, but it's never too early to appreciate teachers. We'll hear from the president of the National Education Association. Jay Fox will also speak with experts about skin cancer and GLP-1 weight loss medications. Plus, Doug Petcash of Face the State will have a look at state politics. First up, on Columbus Perspective.
It is estimated that there are almost 4,000 teachers serving the 46,000 students in the Columbus City School District. Teachers nurture a love of learning and help us and us discover our passions and dedicate their careers to helping us reach our full potential every day. Teachers inspire students' curiosity and imagination. And in early May, National Teacher Appreciation Week is held every year to take a moment to ensure those educators in our lives know how much they mean to us and our communities. Becky Pringle is the president of the National Education Association, the country's largest professional union, representing 3 million educators, and she joins us now on Columbus Perspective. Welcome.
It's good to be with you, Jay.
It's good to be with you again. I'm going to ask you the same question I did last year. What is the biggest challenge facing teachers today?
Oh, my. The biggest challenge facing teachers today is the lack of respect. And, Jay, I've talked to you about that before as I travel across the country. What teachers define as respect is that they make a wage, a salary and benefits that reflect the important work they do. It means that as professionals, they make the teaching and learning decisions. And finally, it means that they have the resources in their classrooms and work sites to actually do the job they love, which is educating students.
One of the things that's happening in the state of Ohio, as you know, is almost all of the major city school districts are facing massive budget cuts, and they've announced layoffs and programmatic cuts. And what's been very inspiring, and I'm sure you've seen this, is hearing from the students who are actually showing up at the school board meetings to express why laying teachers off is a bad idea. Are you seeing that across the country, or is that just unique to Ohio?
Oh, Jay, that is all across the country. Students are living the reality. A lot of times people talk about numbers. I mean, who knows what $1 billion is? People don't know what that is. However, they do know when the school lunches have been cut and they're hungry. They do know when there are so many kids in their classroom that they have to share the time that they get to sit down in the seat. They do know when they don't have a teacher in the classroom or they don't have a paraprofessional to give them extra assistance, or they have to make longer bus routes so it takes longer to get to school. Students actually experience that. And when they ask adults, well, why is this happening? What changed? The adults have to tell them. The people who were elected to make sure you have what you need took that money from our schools and they gave it to billionaires. That's what has happened. And the students are outraged. So they are standing up. They are using their voice. And I will tell you, as educators, we are so excited to see them be the advocates for what they need.
You know, it's interesting because years ago, student disrespect was the conversation. Now, it's Board of Education and community, and I shouldn't say community because that's unfair. Board of Education and city leadership perceived disrespect based on budget cuts. How do those budget cuts hinder the teacher's ability to be effective in the classroom?
You know, Jay, I taught for 31 years. I taught eighth graders the wonders of science. And when I didn't have the ability to buy the hands-on kind of equipment for science, then it was reading about it. It wasn't actually experiencing it. And we understand that for learning to occur, students have to experience it. So that's what teachers are facing every day. And that's an example from science. When you don't have tools, when you don't have technology, when you don't have enough desks, when you don't have enough teachers, then you know that you not only are you going into your own pocket, which, Jay, you know happens all the time, where mm-hmm. teachers take money out of their own family's budget, but also because you have more students with greater gaps coming to your classrooms, it's very difficult for teachers to stand in those gaps. And so the students are going without. Their learning is interrupted, and it breaks the heart of our educators who see it every single day, and they understand why it's happening.
National Teacher Appreciation Week happens the first week of May every year. It's been going on for years. What was it like this year? Was it like, yeah, that's nice, but we really need more than just an attaboy?
We actually changed what we focused on for this teacher appreciation in 2026. We need more than appreciation. We need action. And so as we send folks to nea.org/TAW, we encourage them to, yes, give us an apple. Yes, give us that nice perfume. Absolutely give us a card. But you know what? This year, inside the card, maybe print up a copy of that email you sent your member of Congress telling them, demanding that they not cut funding of your public schools. So when your teacher opens up that homemade card from Kids Which We Love, they see that the parents of that child they've actually taken action. If you're a teenager and you're about to turn 18, that's the best gift you can give us, is that you're in that card, you let us know you actually registered to vote. So you're ready to vote for people who care about our kids and care about our communities and care about our country. So we ask people to take action, and we are seeing that action not only during Teacher Appreciation Week, but our parents and communities are joining us to continue to take action because they know that our students are depending on them.
I remember in high school back in the dark ages, we had an educator who used to host a group of students early in the morning before school started to kind of do a brain trust on how to solve some of the pressing problems, not only in the school, but in the community. And some very interesting solutions came out of those discussions. Are you starting to see high school students doing the same thing and trying to figure out, okay, how can we solve these budget deficits without cutting teachers and staff and programs and making schools ineffective? Are you seeing the students get involved that way?
Oh, yes, Jay. And it's so heartwarming and encouraging, and you feel so proud because we spend our time working on teaching students critical thinking skills and collaborative problem-solving skills. And so when we see them actually rolling up their sleeves and digging into the solutions, and they're doing it together, it's pretty exciting. That's one of the things that we talk about when we say, when we demand that students have the resources they need so that we can teach them those skills. That we demand that our students aren't reduced to a single test score because there's so many other aspects of learning that our students need to spend time on. And when you see students doing those kinds of taking those kinds of action, Jay, you are reminded that they are doing exactly what we're asking them to do, is to use those skills to make the world better.
The 26-27 school year is now upon us. When we look into the crystal ball and we look at the 36-37 school year, if nothing changes, where are we?
Well, let me say this, Jay. Educators all over this country understand the assignment. They understand. And that's why they are talking to parents and collaborating with them. That's why they are talking to their neighbors and relatives. They're doing that right now. because they are still, teachers are still the most trusted voice in any community. And if they are having those one-on-one conversations with their neighbors and standing in the grocery line, telling real stories about real students, about real classrooms, and then asking those people to vote for people who will actually put money into our public schools where 90% of our students go to school, 95% of our students with disabilities. They're connecting one-on-one. They're building those relationships. And our educators are determined to change what's happening in this country. It is not okay that this administration has demolished the Department of Education. It is not okay that they've taken money away from our students with disabilities. It's not okay that they have drained the funding that we use to help our students who need it the most, those who are coming to us already, who are living in poverty. And so we are focused like a laser on the elections in 2026 so that we can change what's happening, not only in Congress, U.S. Congress, but every single place where there's an elected or appointed person in a position of power, from the school board all the way up to Congress, the Senate.
So the best way to honor a teacher, to paraphrase, is to go to the website and learn what you can do to help. That's how you honor the teacher. What is that website again, Becky?
NEA.org/TAW.
All right. We want to thank Becky Pringle for being our guest today. And for Columbus Perspective, I'm Jay Fox.
The Fan.
You're listening to Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Here's Jay Fox.
Approximately 4,600 new cases of melanoma are expected to be diagnosed in Ohio this year, with cases slightly increasing, particularly in our central Ohio region. Now, Ohio averages 25.3 cases per 100,000 people annually. That's higher than the national average. Franklin County, including Columbus, has seen significant melanoma incidences, with cases making up 5% of all new cancers. A new national survey by the Melanoma Research Alliance reveals that widespread misinformation and confusion about sunscreen is leading many Americans and Ohioans to question or even skip sun protection altogether, and that increases their risk for melanoma. Melanoma is one of the most preventable cancers, yet confusion about sunscreen and misunderstanding of daily sun exposure may make prevention more difficult. Dr. Mark Hurlburt is the CEO of the Melanoma Research Alliance, and he joins us now on Columbus Perspective to talk a little bit about this. Good morning.
Good morning, Jay. Thank you so much for having me on your show today.
It's our pleasure. Let's talk about these myths. What are the most common sunscreen myths, and why is this an issue right now?
Yeah, it's a good question. So, you know, the most common myths I hear from people, they think they only need to wear sunscreen in the sunny summer months, you know, that they only need to wear sunscreen or UV protective clothing if they're spending a day outside at the beach or the pool or otherwise outdoors enjoying sports. And that's a big myth, right? We need to protect our skin 365 days all year round. The other myth we hear in our survey found that about half of the people surveyed, more than 2,000 respondents, found that they're not certain about the safety of sunscreens. And I want to clarify that today.
Well, I will tell you personally, I am a 3-time melanoma survivor, one including a very invasive surgery on my face. And when I was a child, I never wore sunscreen except when I was playing sports or at the pool in the summertime. So when we were using sunscreen as a child and when I put sunscreen on my own children, we never had any issues about what was in it. Now, all of a sudden, there are concerns about the ingredients. Are any of these concerns valid?
No, absolutely not. So all the sunscreens available for sale in the United States are approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. The FDA reviews sunscreens just like they would over-the-counter drugs. So everything that's on the market that you can go buy at your local pharmacy or grocery store are safe to use. Yeah, there's two main kinds of sunscreen, and let me back up. Glad to hear if you're doing well, Jay, and sorry to hear you've had melanoma, but I hope you're on a good path here. But all the sunscreens that are available are safe. There are two main kinds. One is what we call a chemical sunscreen. These sunscreens you can apply on your skin. Sometimes you could think of it as the spray sunscreens. And then the second kind is mineral. And the most easy way to think of that is, back in the 1970s and 80s, sort of the zinc oxide, they would see the white sunscreen. You would see lifeguards a lot of times putting it on their nose and face. But today, the mineral sunscreens are created in really marvelous ways where you can put them on without any white cast or marks. And so at the Melanoma Research Alliance, we encourage people to find a sunscreen that works for them, for their skin tone, their skin type, and use it every day, 365 days a year. We do recommend that you use broad spectrum, so that means it protects against UVA and UVB rays. And we recommend broad spectrum SPF 30 or higher. I personally am very fair-skinned. I personally use SPF 50, especially on my face. And then the key to your point about your own story is to use sunscreen every day whenever you're going to be spending time outdoors. And so that could be your 30-minute walk to work, your 30-minute drive to work. You have parts of your skin exposed, and so you want to be wearing sunscreen day in and day out all year round.
All right. You use those three words, or I should say three letters, that some people have no idea what they mean. Explain SPF and explain the difference in the levels.
Yeah, so it's essentially the sun protection factor. And what SPF, so broad spectrum is the first point, so that means it blocks ultraviolet or UVA and UVB rays. That's broad spectrum. And then the typical SPFs you'll find are, 15, 30, 50, 70, or 100. The larger the number gets, the more protection you get. But, SPF 30 is sufficient. I personally use SPF 50. I'm very fair-skinned and prone to burning, and so I wear SPF 50 on my face and on my body, any exposed parts. And then, if you're going to be, really outdoors all day, on a boat, on the water, you could consider using an SPF 70 or a 100. But at a minimum, the Melanoma Research Alliance recommends SPF 30. And the other key is to reapply it, right? You're outdoors, you're sweating, it rubs off different things. So we recommend reapplying. An expert dermatologist tells us to reapply every 2 hours when you're outdoors. And if you go into the water, into the pool or the ocean or the lake, when you come out, dry off and then reapply right away.
So if we're going to wear this if we're going to wear this sunscreen on a daily basis, can it replace our facial moisturizer?
It can. The key is to, especially for people that wear foundation and makeup, women or other people that wear makeup, the key is to make sure that, a marketed sunscreen is a part of your daily routine. So we find that foundations or powders that have SPF in them, usually they're only about SPF 15 and they're not sufficient. So the key is to also specifically apply a marketed sunscreen product as part of your daily routine.
Now, for me, I had a spot on the left side of my nose that first was red and then it was brown and then it turned black. And that was what caused me to go see my dermatologist and found out that I had melanoma. That was my experience. What are the early warning signs of melanoma so that other people can understand when they may have a problem?
Absolutely. So we call it the ABCDE rules. A is it perfectly round or is it asymmetrical? If it's asymmetrical, show that spot to your doctor. B, are the borders of the mole or the spot, in your case, right, it was started off as red. So is the borders irregular? What is the color? So again, especially changes in color is critical. So yours was red and then sort of changed over time. The other part of color that we tell people to be on the lookout for is if you have a mole or some sort of lesion that you see on your body, a new spot that arises, is it discolored? Like is one side of it darker and the other side of it paler or more red? Again, point that out to your doctor. The D is talking about diameter. If the mole is bigger than the size of essentially a pencil eraser, if you could think back to the number two pencils we used to use, if it's bigger than the size of a pencil eraser, then you should have it looked at. And then E is the most critical. Is it evolving and changing over time? And exactly in your case, right, it changed over time. So glad that you got that looked at and got it taken care of.
So most people are going to want to know what sunscreen, what level SPF is going to match my personal circumstances. You said 30, but for you, because you're fair-skinned, you said 50. So is there a website where our listeners can go to learn more and kind of figure out what to do?
Absolutely. So I'd encourage them to visit the Melanoma Research Alliance. We're at curemelanoma.org. They can learn more there. We have a variety of tips and tools for people worried about protecting and preventing skin cancers, preventing melanoma. And they can learn more about all aspects of prevention and sun safety. The other aspect that we didn't touch on, and I'm sure you incorporate this into your daily life, is if you're going to be out at the ballpark, out at the game, you know, outdoors for a substantial period of time, in addition to sunscreen that we can apply on our face, I personally wear a lot of these UV protective clothing, right? So there's sort of a very different manufacturers that have like a polo shirt that has long sleeves. These fabrics are actually manufactured in a way where they're UV protective and can help in your sun safety practices.
All right. We want to thank Dr. Mark Hurlburt, the CEO of the Melanoma Research Alliance, for joining us. And for Columbus Perspective, I'm Jay Fox.
Columbus Perspective is a public affairs presentation of WBNS Radio. The opinions expressed on this program are those of its guests and do not necessarily reflect those of WBNS Radio, its staff, management, or sponsors.
The Fan.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Here's more from Jay Fox.
It is estimated that as many as 45,000 adults in the city of Columbus are taking GLP-1 medications. Those medications can dramatically change the way those people eat. But eating less doesn't always mean eating well. Registered dietitian Maya Feller joins us now on Columbus Perspective to talk about some smart strategies to help these people make every bite count. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are GLP-1s transforming the way Americans eat?
So, Jay, just as you said, the numbers really show that 1 in 8 American adults is currently on a GLP-1 medication. And that number is expected to triple by 2030. So, you know, this is not a trend. It's really a transformation in how Americans are eating. And when you're eating less, what you do eat, it matters more than ever. So whether you're on a GLP-1 or just trying to make better choices, our bodies really need fuel to feel energized and be at their best. And as a dietitian, my whole approach is making that feel manageable, not overwhelming.
Now, I understand that protein and fiber are super critical for these patients. I get the protein part. Explain the fiber part.
Yeah. Okay. So I want you to think about them, Jay, as like a power pair. Protein, it's a great source of sustained energy, and it supports muscle health, immune health, and even healthy skin and hair. Now, fiber, it's essential for gut health, which is really the foundation of overall wellness, impacting everything from digestion to heart health to immunity. And then together, protein and fiber, they help you feel full and satisfied. So practically speaking, I tell people to really think about building every meal around both protein and fiber. Think about foods that are packed with other nutrients as well, like fruits, vegetables, whole grains, like brown rice for fiber. And then for protein, think about lean proteins like chicken, dairy products, like cheese, and even beans, which actually give you both protein and fiber in one.
Now, I also understand water intake is critical and must be increased, and that caffeine and alcohol must also be decreased, especially later in the day. Is that true?
Yes. So one of the things that we want to think about when someone's on a GLP-1 is making sure that they're well hydrated. One of the mechanisms with the medication is that it actually decreases people's desire for food and hydration in general. And when folks are not well hydrated, they're more likely to feel some of the unwanted GI symptoms. So making sure that they're drinking around half their body weight in ounces of water throughout the day, and like as you said, not toward the end of the day, really make sure that their digestion continues to work as we intend it to.
Now, we have always been taught that the perimeter of the grocery store is our friend and the aisles are not. And that's because the perimeter means fresh fruits and vegetables, the meat department, and something that is actually baked on site in the bakery. But I understand there are changes in the frozen food aisle that might be helpful to people who need GLP-1 friendly foods. Is that accurate?
The frozen food aisle can absolutely be your best friend if you know what to look for. A great example is Vital Pursuit, a line of GLP-1 friendly frozen meals developed by Vital Pursuit chefs and registered dietitians. Every meal is crafted with at least 20 grams of protein and at least 3 grams of fiber, plus key nutrients like vitamin A, calcium, or iron. So you're really never sacrificing nutrition or taste for convenience. And if you really want to maximize your protein, Vital Pursuit also has a Max Pro line that delivers 30-plus grams of protein and 12-plus grams of fiber per meal and includes delicious options like chicken and spinach garlic Alfredo bowl. I'm actually a really big fan of the new uncured pizza pepperoni Max Pro. It's really delicious. It's made with 100% real cheese, no artificial colors, and zero added sugars. And another fun fact, Jay, is Vital Pursuit's Max Pro Pizza actually holds the title of the most protein per serving of any pizza in the frozen nutritional meals category.
Which means you'll have one slice and you'll be full?
It means you'll have one slice and you are going to get the most protein of any pizza, frozen pizza, and it's going to be super delicious. I've tried them. They're amazing. And it's so great for like a summer night. It's really, really easy.
Now, what about for people who are extremely active in what they do not necessarily have time to sit down for 3 meals a day? What can they do? What about like the supplements, the protein bars, you know, a piece of fresh fruit? What should we be looking for in that regard?
Yeah, so I really encourage people, especially when I'm working with them, to round out how they're eating. They want to have a mix of fresh, frozen, boxed, jarred, canned, to just as you say, make eating easier, right? So lean on some of those frozen foods, but then also think about having fruits, maybe some nuts, if you're not allergic to them. But then you want to have snacks that are easy and nutrient dense. So I do like foods in their whole and minimally processed form as your snacks. And then I love to have pantry staples for your breakfast, lunch, and dinner, because that just makes it so simple. And it makes sure that the person actually gets something into their body, which is essential when you're taking a GLP-1.
So yes or no to the protein bars?
So, you know, I think that there's a place for protein bars. Folks are going to want to take a look for the added sugars, and they're also going to want to make sure that the protein bar is giving them sufficient amounts of fiber. And, yeah, so that's what I would say.
What happens when you are forced, and I know that's a loose term, to have to eat at a fast food restaurant? What do you order?
So I always tell people, do the best with what's accessible to you. If that fast food restaurant has some protein, whether or not it's plant or animal, if they've got a vegetable, that's fantastic. If there's a whole grain, even better. But I really want folks to think about the protein, fats, and carbs that are showing up on the plate and making sure that it's balanced. So let's say you decide to have a burger, and there's absolutely no shame in having a burger. That is protein. protein, fat, and carbohydrate, consider rounding it out with a side salad or some steamed broccoli or some other type of vegetable. That way you're getting all of the macronutrients. So you want to get smart about navigating the menu and make the choice that's the best for your health at that moment.
And what about budget conscious individuals? Because these GLP-1s can be extremely expensive, which means having high cost food items is going to be problematic. Are these Vital Pursuit products expensive, or are there other budget friendly options?
So one of the reasons that I like the Vital Pursuit products is because they are in the frozen section, right? So that makes them inherently more shelf stable, and they are an affordable choice. If you're thinking about having a well-portioned meal that's going to give you your macronutrients, your micronutrients, and the trace minerals that you need while on a GLP-1, Vital Pursuit offers a great selection. I also do think that this is a place where folks might want to think about doing a combination of what I refer to as chef's helpers. So partially prepared foods and things that they're preparing themselves. So if you have a frozen pizza, then maybe you're taking some frozen broccoli, putting it on a sheet pan, seasoning it up, and then rounding it out in that way. I agree with you that we have to think about budget. Food is at an all-time high. You want to have a really diverse kitchen and pantry to help you stretch those shopping dollars.
Now, does the VitalPursuit.com website tell us what stores are carrying this product?
Absolutely. You can go to vitalpursuit.com for more information about what products are where, as well as all the nutrition facts.
And for folks that want a website other than Vital Pursuit just to talk about nutrition regarding GLP-1s, what other source can you offer them?
They can head to my website, MayaFellerNutrition.com, where I've got a blog and great information about GLP-1.
All right. We want to thank dietitian Maya Feller for being our guest today. And for Columbus Perspective, I'm Jay Fox.
The Fan.
You're listening to Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Now courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10 TV, here's Doug Petcash from the Sunday Morning Public Affairs Program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10TV.
We are now into summer. While many of us may look forward to grilling in the backyard or going on vacation, other families feel a heavier weight of stress with school out because their kids are missing out on school meals. Summer is actually the busiest time of year for the Mid-Ohio Food Collective. It serves 20 central Ohio counties through its network of 600 partners, such as neighborhood food pantries. While those food banks continue to provide meals throughout the summer, the Mid-Ohio Kitchen opens to serve tens of thousands of meals on top of that. Meantime, the collective faces its own challenges this time of year. I talked with Mike Cochran with the Mid-Ohio Food Collective about how the nonprofit is combating summer hunger. Mike, thanks for being here today. For people who don't know, what is the Mid-Ohio Food Collective?
Sure. So the Mid-Ohio Food Collective is the largest hunger relief organization in central and eastern Ohio. We are the backbone of the emergency food system. We work with a network of approximately 600 partner agencies, which are local, community-based organizations, food pantries, soup kitchens, and the like, in order to get food to where it's needed most and make sure that everyone across our region has access to the food they need to thrive.
So now we're moving into the summer season. You know, everyone thinks of the holiday season. It seems like that's when your biggest fundraising is going to happen, and you know the spotlight is put on the need. Mm-hmm. What is the need, though, heading into the summer months?
So the summer is a unique time of year because for so many families, during the school year, kids might get breakfast or lunch at school, and so those are meals taken care of, and parents mostly have to focus on what am I going to put on dinner, you know, on the table for dinner tonight. But when school is out, those meals go with it. And so for many families, summer is actually a time of hunger and really the challenge of trying to figure out how to make sure the kids stay fed and keep everyone happy.
And one of the ways you do that is through the Mid-Ohio Kitchen, right? What is it and why is summer the busiest time for
it. Right. So we talk about how we are more than a food bank. We are the largest food bank in Ohio, but we have all of these other parts of what we do to address the needs in our community and make sure that everyone has the access to the food and resources they need to thrive. And so the Mid-Ohio Kitchen is a part of that effort, one of our key assets, where we're taking prepared, nutritious meals and getting them out to fill gaps in community. And so during the whole year, we have programs for kids and for seniors and for after-school programs. But during the summer, we ramp up this whole summer feeding program because we know that when those meals get lost, it's a real hardship for families. And so we've created a system to help fill in some of those.
How many meals does that provide for folks?
Sure. So we have over 40 different sites that we operate just through the summer feeding program alone. And it's over 100,000 meals this summer, probably a little bit more than that, that we're going to distribute. And that's to thousands of different kids. And so if you think, you've got kids, whether they are at a summer program location or if they're at home, we're creating this distribution system with these great partners, Boys and Girls Clubs and other great local community organizations, so that people can go and get that food. So those kids don't have to worry about, what am I going to have for lunch this summer? They can worry about being a kid and playing with their friends.
And you mentioned that, kids during the summer aren't getting those school meals. Are there other challenges that families face in the summer on top of that?
Well, of course. So it's not just the fact that the meal is missing, but what does that mean for a family's budget as a whole? If suddenly you've got a couple kids at home and you have to fill, two more meals a day, that money's got to come from somewhere. The food has to come from somewhere.
Stretching budgets.
You stretch the budget, right? And then, of course, you have every kid at home and they're a little bored. They're going to go rummaging through the pantry and clear out everything in 10 minutes. And so just the challenge of what does that mean for a family's budget and how do they help, make it whole? And so many families, unfortunately, for many of us, summer is a time for grilling out and go to the pool and maybe a vacation if you're lucky. There are a lot of families for whom summer can kind of be a time of stress and anxiety. But no school doesn't have to mean no lunch.
Are there other programs through the Mid-Ohio Food Collective during the summer?
Absolutely. So our whole network of operations, those 600 partner agencies, that whole food distribution network that we have, all the pantries, that's all operational year-round. So this summer feeding program with our kitchen is above and beyond all of that program. So we're still serving 5,000 families a day through our partner network. These summer meals, it's above and beyond on top of that.
Okay, so families face summer challenges. Does the collective face challenges in the summertime in terms of donations? As I mentioned, the holiday season, people really open their hearts and their checkbooks to if people still use checkbooks, to help out nonprofits. The summer, is it a challenging time?
Well, I would say, first of all, we need steady and consistent funding throughout the year because, unfortunately, free food isn't free. Being able to distribute, 70-plus million pounds of food a year actually comes with many different parts and pieces, and the operations to sustain that are year-round. So, of course, we're grateful for, big spikes of funding during the holiday season, but the truth is that we need that funding, and we also need the food programs flowing year-long without interruption because, for some families, summer is a hard time, but maybe you lose your job in the fall. You got a flat tire in the spring, or the winter, you really want to buy your kids a Christmas present, and you got to figure out how to make that all fit. Yeah. So these are year-round challenges. But for the summer, there are certainly some families for whom not having those school meals puts pressure on the rest of their budget, and we can become a critical part of helping them be a bridge to the fall.
One of the programs, the government programs that really help people is SNAP. Mm-hmm. First of all, just how critical is that in helping to fill the need?
SNAP, which some people still know as food stamps, it's our nation's frontline defense against hunger. Feeding America, our national network, estimates that for every meal food banks provide, SNAP provides 9 times as many meals. We simply could not use the charitable system to make up for that program. If there weren't SNAP, there would be a whole lot of hunger and hardship in our community. And Ohio is a generous and supportive place. I don't think anyone wants to see that. But so SNAP is absolutely essential. And then we and our amazing network of partners and other great nonprofits, we do what we can to supplement around the margins. But at the core of our national hunger relief strategy, it's SNAP.
I want to get back real quickly to the Mid-Ohio Food Collective's funding, though. You lost federal funding this year. How much was it? And are you able to make up that difference?
Sure. So we Our funding comes from a lot of different places. The majority of our funding for our direct operations comes from generous people here in our communities. It's individuals, it's companies, it's churches and community groups and schools. We just had a school fund drive that raised thousands of dollars for us recently, and that turns into, you know, several thousand meals. It's great. But on the food side of the equation, the federal programs are a really important part of that. And state and federal programs together make up over 40% of all the food we distribute. And so it's not possible to make up for all of that with individual donations. It's so important that that public funding remain robust because, you know, unfortunately, the need for our services has gone up and up and up over the last several years. Now we see the cost of living rising again for so many people, and we're worried that that's going to show up, but meaning more hungry families that have to make the bold choice to turn to a pantry.
Have you seen a spike at all in regards to how high gas prices have been lately?
So it's really hard to tease out that one-to-one sort of, of connection. What we can say is several years ago when inflation first spiked, we started serving way more families than we ever would have expected. Last year, we had about 1.8 million service visits. That's a time when a family walked through the doors of their local pantry. And several years ago, that was closer to 1.1, 1.2 million. And so while we haven't seen a spike in the last month or two, we are sustaining these record high levels, which unfortunately just reflects there are a lot of people who are just living on the edge, paycheck to paycheck, hoping to get through the next week and, you know, one bad day away from needing a little bit of help.
And so with that being said, finally today, if somebody out there wanted to help, how can they?
Absolutely. So there's a lot of different ways to help. You know, first of all, if you can donate, for every dollar donated to Mid-Ohio Food Collective, we can distribute 2.5 meals of healthy, nutritious food. We actually have a summer campaign running right now, which means no school means no lunch, specifically raising funds to help support kids and families through the summertime. So donating is always a great way. Even a little bit can make a big difference.
Or volunteer some time at your local pantry.
Or volunteer some time. There's no better way to meet your neighbors where they are, to realize the humanity of everyone in your community, and to do something that really feels like it matters. And you can walk away feeling good about it.
Yes, you can. For more information, you can go to the Mid-Ohio Food Collective's website at mofc.org.
Again, that's courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10 TV. From the Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10 TV. This has been Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan. Heard each Sunday morning at 6 on WBNS FM 97.1 The Fan and on 1460 AM The Fan 2.